Hello, I'm Stephen Fry, a trustee of the Royal Academy of Arts, and very proud to be so. Welcome to our podcast.
It seems to me that for centuries, architects have always used drawing as part of the creative process, as a means of communicating. And I guess I've followed that trend or that tradition mainly because I enjoy drawing. And because I'm old and, you know, I'm of a slightly different generation, although it has to be said that in my practice, Wilkinson Air, we've really tried to be at the forefront of technology. You know, we're very highly computerized and so on. It's just that it seems to me that you can have the two things going. You can have the CGIs and the 3D programs, parametric design, but you can also sketch as a means of communicating. But also I find the process is a sort of creative one, so I carry, like most architects, and I know there are a lot of architects here, I carry the projects I'm working on around in my head all the time. I can't get rid of them, you know. I quite like to sometimes, but I also carry a sketchbook around with me, and when I have a moment, and it might be at home, or it might be in the office, or on a train or a plane, but I can sort of work through some problems or just ideas. And I think that's the great thing about sketchbooks, is that you can carry it around with you, and you don't have to plug it in. You just need a pencil or a pen, and you can work through processes in your mind. And I find that a very important part of my architecture, really. And I can go on, but I sort of suspect that Humphrey would like to come in at this point, because I'd just like to say that I also carry a sketchbook around with me when I'm travelling, and I like drawing buildings, and I give myself about an hour to do a drawing of a building. And I know Humphrey gives himself an hour to do a portrait. And it seems to me that there's something, it's a sort of similar process, except you don't use a pencil, you use paint. Is that right?
Yes, it is, and I use paint not because I'm old, which I am, and not because I've used paint all my life, but because I think it's just technologically way ahead of computers. I mean, the control, absolutely. In a way, that the idea that one can make a sort of human response.
Much faster response, as well.
It's faster. Sorry, we'll get down. It's just absolutely lovely, Chris, you know, to be able to talk to Chris. We've been like, wives and girlfriends, not allowed to mix, as it were, during the World Cup, because Kate said that we were going to have a conversation, so that we've been kept apart. So that's now sort of desperate, and if I go over and sit on his lap and start licking him all over, you'll forgive me. But
I'm not sure that I will, actually.
I just love it, really. One of the things about the first room that you walk into of your exhibition is, to me, that is drawing. I can't remember the title of the show. Is drawing, thinking?
Thinking through drawing.
Thinking through drawing. And the drawings seem to come as deftly and quickly as your thoughts, and it's so direct, and I think that's very important. And I suppose if there is a kinship, you mentioned my portraits, you know, which I've really started doing in the last sort of 6 years, because I've come to everything rather late in life and just started getting going and everything, and those portraits are probably what I'm meant to be here for. It just took about 60 years.
I think you can talk. It just that it's something we have in common.
Yeah.
Because you painted me, amongst other things. I know a lot of the people you painted, and you captured them in an hour. And I think that's something really incredible.
Do
Well, it's nice. I didn't mean that, actually. It's very nice of you to say that. I wasn't. What I meant was that when I sit down and do those things, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I probably have some inner kind of repertoire of practice or something. But when I'm doing, and you remember I did four of you.
Yeah,
I did three, one of Diane. Four.
And one of Diane.
Four. Right. Yeah. And one of them was the good one. But you know, a few of the darts went kind of slightly wide of the board. The point of what I'm saying is that I put it down, I don't think, you know, I don't use that part of the brain or whatever it is to do. And your drawings, when you're designing a building, you're thinking. Now, drawing, to me, drawing is a kind of a bridge. Anyway, it's getting out of what's here, so that first of all, so that you can see it, But architects are different to painters, by the way. Should I just talk through the fact how lovely it is to have architects at the Royal Academy? Because we painters are kind of pathological solitaries. We're really not very good at, you know, communicating with people. But Chris has to communicate. When you make a drawing, you then probably have to show it to somebody to say, this is what I think.
Yes, the problem we have is that it's very complex. When you're commissioned or you're working on a competition, you have a big brief and an awful lot of information. You can't see the wood from the trees. You have to work through it, and gradually it starts to make some sense. And the bigger the project, the more complicated often. And the way I make sense of it is to sit down with my sketchbook and draw what I know, which is usually not very much to start with, and then gradually ideas come through. So it's a sort of part of the process as far as I'm concerned. But it's not as free as your process, which is a wonderfully free way of approaching something quite formal. A portrait is quite a formal thing to do. You don't have to measure out the proportions. You don't think so much of scale. You start at one end of the paper and carry on to the other end. You know, as architects, we're used to sort of regimenting things, and we have to get proportions right. And it's very difficult, you know, it's difficult to get proportions right. We try. And with practice.
To me, proportion and precision is paramount, and geometry.
Yeah, and geometry.
The
exactly.
Most important thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I was looking in the cab on the way here, I was just looking through your book, and it fell open at St. Mary le Strand, and it's a golden section.
Yes.
Now, I did a painting called Lord Volvo and His Estate in 1982, and that is absolutely based on the golden section, and it's got a snail spiralling on the top right hand corner, and it's got a square, and it's got all the things. We won't bore you with golden sections, but I do think that actually a golden section is a very, very lovely thing. It's like starting with the right material or the right piece of paper or something. You can actually then, you're a few rungs up the ladder.
Can I tell the story of that drawing?
Because
this was a drawing at a public inquiry, and occasionally we have to present our work, and we have QCs sort of battling to make us look stupid. But the advantage we have is that because we're the expert in our field, as long as you hold your own, they can't really attack you. And on this occasion, this is a building in the Strand, and they said, but surely this building doesn't fit in with the context. St. Mary le Strand, quite near. And I said, no, you're not correct there, because the proportions are exactly the same. And I did the drawing for the QC, and it was accepted that actually it's a very different piece of architecture, but the proportions are the same, or very similar.
Very good.
So, and I think what you're alluding to also is the fact that these proportions of beauty really are set up by nature. I mean, they exist in nature, and we naturally sort of fall in line with nature.
Mm. I have a sort of a benchmark, which is the Parthenon.
Yes.
And I think, when I look at a work of art, as it were, for instance, I've got a lovely thing over my telly at home, which is Richard Hamilton's Five Tires. And it's a print. It's a little sort of series of prints that he did, you know, seven. And I look at it, and it was made from an advertisement, and it shows the first 50 years of technology in the 20th century, illustrated in tires. And he worked considerably. He started drawing them in the 60s. You probably know about this. He started drawing them in the 60s and got bored and abandoned them. And then in the early 70s, he was in Germany, and computers were beginning to be kind of come into usefulness for... somebody said, "Oh, I've got a," saw the drawings, and Hamilton said, "What?" He said, he said, "I've got a program that will help you draw that. See these." I mean, they were, he was very, very meticulous, Hamilton. Right. Now, I'm also a fan of Haynes manuals, which is what you have in your car, Ford Capri, up on the jack and whatever, and you go in underneath, and you've got your Ford, And there's a picture of a tire in that. And it's lovely. I have got one of a Ford Capri, and it's got this blown, everything in there. You can see in the engine, and it's signed a man called Terry Hands. And I look at that, and I think, why is the Richard Ham? And then I think the Richard Hamilton is nearer the Parthenon. I can't quite explain why, but the thing about the Parthenon is it is the golden section, I think. But for some reason, you feel well when you're looking at it. Even the bits that drop off it are beautifully proportioned. Even the chips and what have you. I've had this for years. It was actually nearly knocked off the perch last weekend when I was in the British Museum in the Egyptian room. I'm beginning to discover that, but don't let's get started on the Egyptian room, or we'll be here all night. So it's a building. What I'm trying to say is that did you not find that curious that I have a building as a measure? I don't say, Bathsheba, Rembrandt.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I'm very glad. I mean, my work depends on people wanting buildings, so that sounds good to me.
Well, this is, look, okay, here, that's a really interesting point. We're all sitting in here, and we're sitting on chairs, and I don't know if you've ever read the joke about the fish, the big fish coming. David Foster Wallace used it as at the beginning of a talk to a university. Big fish comes along, two little fish come along. The big fish says to the little fish, how's the water today? And the little fish look at each other, and they swim on a few, and the little fish then say to each other, "What the hell's water?" Now, we are in a room, and we don't notice it. We don't think about it. We're sitting on design, and we're, thank God, an architect and a builder has made a flat floor and vertical walls, and this is to me that I'm a lover of Constable, but I'm discovering this chap called Turner, partly from being the professor of perspective, and he really went up into the air and went up into the clouds and painted the moisture and painted that atmosphere. One of the things that I think drawing has to conform to is what you have to conform to is... God, I feel like Jim Nocte. This is a question, but it's going to take about half an hour. Is that is that a cloud sits on a thermal, rather like we're sitting on a chair, on a bit that's held up by walls and what have you. And so it has a relationship to true, and it's fighting gravity. It's not dead, it's shifting along, and it has this speed and what have you. And your drawings, I'm getting to my point, Chris, your drawings, and I pointed out the Mary Rose Museum, to me they're like cars. Your buildings are like cars compared to this building. This building, the cars weren't invented.
And this room is a very special room. I reckon it's a double cube,
right,
in proportion terms. But it's more importantly where Darwin launched the Origin of Species. And I find that the added dimension, the fourth dimension, which is time, comes into it. And it seems to me that buildings and spaces have history, and I think that's part of the architecture in a way. Although it's not something you can design for, it happens later on. But I'm talking rubbish, really, aren't I? But I mean, you know what I mean. It does have, there is a relevance to time.
Yes, but time compressed and speed. And I think our concept now of time is extreme section. It's got a snail spiralling on the top right-hand corner. It's got a square, and it's got all the things. We won't bore you with golden sections. But I do think that actually a golden section is a very, very lovely thing. It's like starting, with the right material or the right piece of paper or something. You can actually then, you're a few rungs up the ladder.
Can I tell the story of that drawing?
Because
this was a drawing at a public inquiry, and occasionally we have to present our work, and we have QCs sort of battling to make us look stupid. But the advantage we have is that because we're the expert in our field, as long as you hold your own, they can't really attack you. And on this occasion, this is a building in the Strand, and they said, but surely this building doesn't fit in with the context. St. Mary le Strand, quite near. And I said, no, you're not correct there, because the proportions are exactly the same. And I did the drawing for the QC, and it was accepted that actually it's a very different piece of architecture, but the proportions are the same, or very similar.
Very good.
So, and I think what you're alluding to also is the fact that these proportions of beauty really are set up by nature. I mean, they exist in nature, and we naturally sort of fall in line with nature.
Mm. I have a sort of a benchmark, which is the Parthenon.
Yes.
And I think when I look at a work of art, as it were, for instance, I've got a lovely thing over my telly at home, which is Richard Hamilton's Five Tires, and it's a print. It's a little sort of series of prints that he did, you know, seven. And I look at it, and it was made from an advertisement, and it shows the first 50 years of technology in the 20th century, illustrated in tires. And he worked considerably. He started drawing them in the 60s. You probably know about this. He started drawing them in the 60s and got bored and abandoned them. And then in the early 70s, he was in Germany, and computers were beginning to be kind of come into usefulness. Somebody said, oh, I've got a... saw the drawings in... Hamilton said, he said, I've got a program that will help you draw that, see these. I mean, he was very, very meticulous, Hamilton. Right. Now, I'm also a fan of Haynes manuals, which is what you have in your car, Ford Capri, up on the jack and whatever, and you go in underneath and you've got your Ford, And there's a picture of a tyre in that. And it's lovely. I have got one of a Ford Capri, and it's got this blown, everything in there. You can see in the engine, and it's signed a man called Terry Hands. And I look at that, and I think, why is the Richard Hamilton? And then I think the Richard Hamilton is nearer the Parthenon. I can't quite explain why, but the thing about the Parthenon is it is the golden section, I think. But for some reason, it you feel well when you're looking at it. Even the bits that drop off it are beautifully proportioned. Even the chips and what have you. I've had this for years. It was actually nearly knocked off the perch last weekend when I was in the British Museum in the Egyptian room. I'm beginning to discover that, but don't let's get started on the Egyptian room. We'll be here all night. So it's a building. What I'm trying to say is that did you not find that curious that I have a building as a measure? I don't say Bathsheba, Rembrandt.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I'm very glad. I mean, my work depends on people wanting buildings, so that sounds good to me.
Well, this is, look, okay, here, that's a really interesting point. We're all sitting in here, and we're sitting on chairs, and I don't know if you've ever read the joke about the fish, the big fish coming. David Foster Wallace used it as the beginning of a talk to a university. Big fish comes on, two little fish come on. The big fish says to the little fish, how's the water today? And the little fish look at each other, and they swim on a few. And the little fish then say to each other, what the hell's water? Now, we are in a room, and we don't notice it. We don't think about it. We're sitting on design, and we're, thank God, an architect and a builder has made a flat floor and vertical walls. And this is, to me, I'm a lover of Constable, but I'm discovering this chap called Turner, partly from being the professor of perspective. And he really, went up into the air and went up into the clouds and painted the moisture and painted that atmosphere. And, you see, one of the things that I think drawing has to conform to is what you have to conform to is... God, I feel like Jim Nocte. This is a question, but it's going to take about half an hour. Is that a cloud sits on a thermal, rather like we're sitting on a chair, on a bit that's held up by walls and what have you. And so it has a relationship to true, and it's fighting gravity. It's not dead, it's shifting along, and it has this speed and what have you. And your drawings, I'm getting to my point, Chris. Your drawings, and I pointed out the Mary Rose Museum, to me they're like cars. Your buildings are like cars. Compared to this building. This building, cars weren't invented.
And this room is a very special room. I reckon it's a double cube,
right,
in proportion terms, but it's more importantly where Darwin launched the Origin of Species. And I find that the added dimension, the fourth dimension, which is time, comes into it. And it seems to me that buildings and spaces have history, and I think that's part of the architecture in a way. Although it's not something you can design for, it happens later on. But I'm talking rubbish, really, aren't I? But I mean, you know what I mean. It does have, there is a relevance to time.
Yes, but time compressed and speed. And I think our concept now of time is extremely different. I mean, I wasn't alive 150 years ago, but I think that they had just a very different idea. I'm showing something at the moment in the Design Museum, part of Margaret Calvert's. Margaret Calvert, who, as I'm sure you all know, designed the great road signs, which I think are they're the wonderful public drawings in England. And they're designed, she did them with Jock Kinnear, who did the big blue motorway signs, and all. He did all the typography designs. She did the pictorials. And when they got together, they said, these have got to be, first of all, they're thinking of art, or, you know, making something, drawing. They think, this has got to be read at 60 miles an hour.
Hmm.
Now, you know, Rembrandt didn't have 60 miles an hour, and Gainsborough didn't, and that sort of thing. And, you know, we see...
Didn't he? The speed.
Nearer.
Yeah.
A little bit nearer. And he went up, but he, you know, he was kind of in awe of, you know, the rain, steam, and speed pitch. He was... I think the effect on us all, something that hasn't been talked about, nobody really talks about it, is the car. I mean, my life has been seen through a windscreen. You know, it's 64 years of looking through things, zooming, or sound, and what have you. And I think that architecture is affected by that.
Absolutely.
Because you spend so much time, suddenly, actually, you're in a cloud, moving along, scudding along, rather than sitting still like you might have done 150 years ago, and come up with a room like this. What do you think? Because it shows in your drawings, is what I'm trying to say, Chris.
I don't know how to answer that, but I can say that the Mary Rose project was a very slow project. It's taken 10 years. It's not quite finished yet. We're moving into the last phase soon. And so it'll be finished in the spring of next year. But the first drawings I did were in 2004 or 2005, the competition stage. And I'm very pleased that I did most of the drawings in a sketchbook, because they act as a good record, a reference for what I'm doing. And when people are wanted to change things, I can sort of look back at the originals, the early thoughts and sketches, and it takes my mind back to that moment in time. And so I find, for all sorts of reasons, I think sketchbooks are very useful for architects. And one of the reasons for having the exhibition was to sort of promote the idea of architects still carrying sketchbooks and making notes and drawings, so that they can still do this along with their computer work. And I think it's very valid.
You've said a couple of things, one about stillness and also about time. And I was thinking, Chris, to the room we've got here, which isn't the sketchbooks, it's actually got your lovely drawings of Italy. If you haven't had the chance to see it, Chris does beautiful drawings. And it feels like at a very different time. You know, you give yourself, it's often done on holiday in a more relaxed space. It's about observation. The buildings you're capturing are older buildings, essentially, aren't they, in Lucca, which have stood a couple of hundred years. And I just wonder how that, two things there, you know, we were reflecting on time, how you're sitting observing buildings of a very different time from this time, but are also occupied and very, you know, they're as relevant and alive as they were when they were built, potentially. And also that idea of stillness and what drawing brings to a sense of stillness in your thinking about architecture?
Well, I love historic buildings, but I don't want to build historic buildings. I'm happy to work on them, but I think that architecture is... Well, I know that architecture is constantly changing. It never stays still. So architecture changes with technology, and this is a fact. You know, I mean, you only have to look back and you can see when cast iron was invented, the architecture changed. When steel came in, it changed, concrete and so on. And it's constantly upgrading itself. But it's still great to look back. I mean, there's no reason why one shouldn't look back. But as an architect, I'm interested in the present. And I work in the present. And I like exploring new materials and new techniques. Anything that's relevant, really. Because I think that's important, that the architecture is representative of today.
I think I was using the word still as well in against what Humphrey was saying, but against in the car. You know, you give yourself an hour. And I'm maybe coming back to this question, why do you both, where did the hour come from?
It's a sort of to do with the amount of concentration. And also, if you're sitting in or standing in a street drawing, it's very uncomfortable, actually, and people come up and sort of jostle you, and you know, you want to get out, but you've got to capture it somehow and get out of there. That's why I limit my time. And when I went on the trip up the Nile, and there's a sketchbook on the Nile, we get off the boat, and we had about probably an hour and 10 minutes, and I could only devote an hour to sketching in that time. So that was very much related to the guide and the amount of time they gave me.
Oh, I used to take an awfully long time over portraits, and I gradually found, I mean, when I started, wrong image. I'd been making these what I call kind of splodges before I do a long-winded thing, and I'd put the colour down as it was, boom, and then the person would come and I'd start sitting, and I'd have this blob, and very very quickly that blob became my map for the for the slow pictures. Now, rather like you being uncomfortable on the Nile, people who came and sat for me didn't want to sit. So I could, and also then I thought, well, I want to paint that person, but I don't want to, I don't know what my opening line's going to be. You know, would you like to give up work for 2 weeks and come and sit in my studio? And it did take me about 58 years to realise that these little the blobs, what I was doing, that weren't kind of, were better than the ones that took me an awful long time. And I had this, I mean, when I was doing, when I painted things like Lord Volvo, and this was 30 years ago, I kind of wanted to be slightly, I certainly didn't want to do portraits. I'd never wanted to do portraits. I never thought about that. Didn't think about that. It didn't interest me. I did wonder. I kind of felt slightly like Pasolini. You know, I wanted to gather. I'd say, oh, I'd like to have you for my film, or I'd like to have you, and then somehow to bring the people in. But I wanted to make paintings of them, and.
Well, it's a very enjoyable experience, I can say, because it starts with a glass of wine and a sandwich or something like that, and then before you know it, you're sitting down and it's all finished, it's all over. It's very good.
Oh, I love the sound of the glass of wine. Nobody offers me wine.
I thought you did offer me a glass of wine.
Did I?
And I know that I was comparing notes with Nick Grimshaw. He...
He came down.
I did give him wine.
He came down in a taxi, and he kept the taxi waiting until he'd finished so that he could get back, because he had an important meeting. So he literally only had an hour, I think.
Yeah. I actually got him there almost under false pretenses. First of all, I fed him like a foie gras goose. You know, I put wine into him, and then, you know, nice salad and cheese and that sort of thing. And then as a sort of aside at the end, I said, would you mind sitting there? And if I'd known about the taxi. Oh, my God. Okay. One of the things you said earlier that I just want to pick up on was that you said, most interestingly, you say you're adapting, you're now, you're building, say, to me, I am Chris Wilkinson, I'm alive now, this is what I think. Mm-hmm. And that is just about, to me, that is the most important thing that any of us can do and sort of externalize, you know, make something to show, you know, this is what I think. But I think that drawing adapts, you know, just as fast as architecture.
Yeah.
There was a fantastic fuss here about 4 or 5 years ago when Tracy Emin was made Iranda Professor of Drawing. And everyone said, but she can't. And what they meant was, she can't draw like Michelangelo. She can't draw like Graham Salt. You know, whatever it is. People compare. All artists draw, you know, and they may not draw with a pen or with a pencil or whatever, but I think this is, I know this is kind of a big subject, but I think that drawing is to do with proportion and orchestration and, you know, when to bring the symbols together and when to have a little ting on a triangle and what have you. And the fact is, I mean, look, there's another fascinating bit in Chris's book. He's got a photograph of his tools, of his trade, which are a Pentel 0.9 and a...
He's got one.
Yes.
0.4.
Most architects use these.
Do they? Mm. Well, they used to use these, which is what I use, which are Rotrings, although they're not, they're actually Statler now. I have to ring up Statler every year, and I say, because, you know, artists are terrified that the factory is going to close down, and I say, are you still... Yes, Mr. Olsen, we are still making Statler Marsmatic and what have you. This is what... No self-respecting architect has been seen with one of these.
Oh, no, I think quite a lot of people still...
Do they?
Like, yeah.
Well...
No, but in a way, you see, the traditional architect's drawing with a set square and T square, which is where I started, Dennis Laston, that's all gone. And I'm very happy that it's gone, because it was painful, really, you know, measuring it all out with the scale, and then you get a sort of blot and you've got to try and scrape the ink away. It was very difficult in the middle of the night. You know, the pens would cake up, rotring pens. And it was, you know, so you meant you had another 3 hours until you could finish the drawing. Now we don't have any of that, and that's good.
Have you found that's freed you? You know, now you're the act of drawing for you has become something which isn't associated with doing measured drawings. It's much more to do with the sketch. And then...
Definitely, because it's much more immediate, you see. It's about... It's about just putting something on paper and getting it down quickly, probably, but more especially getting the sort of feeling of it down on paper. I mean, with a T-square and a rotating pen, there's not a lot of feeling involved, although some people were masters of it. But it was a lengthy process.
And when did you start to bring in watercolours, which are, you know, in the latter sketchbooks are very, very prevalent and really capture the atmosphere? When did they come in and why and how?
Well, I just discovered that watercolour is a marvellous material, and you don't have to put so many lines, because a splash of colour covers a larger area, and it's more effective than lines and shading. And the other aspect I like about it, I mean, I just do a sort of wash, which is a traditional architectural thing where it's very thin and it's watery, and it's very difficult to control. And because I'm trained to be very precise and formal, I can't control the watercolour wash, so it actually frees me up a bit. Not as much as Humphrey, but a little bit. And I find that quite exciting, because suddenly you get these sort of blobs, and you think, well, I don't really want that blob there, but there's nothing you can do about it, so you have to work around it. And in a way, it's very healthy, because I think we're all a bit too... architects and designers are too sort of set in their ways and very formal, and it's quite good to relax a bit.
I think of drawing as, you mentioned watercolour, which is the greatest, it's the most difficult thing to do, because you're working with light, and light coming through, you're not working opaque and you can't go over it. No. So the light shines, which is how colour actually works. You know, we can see each other because somebody's put the lights on, you know, and if they turn the lights off, we'd take a bit of time, we could probably still see each other, but it would utterly change the room. And watercolour works in that way. I would suggest, Chris, that when your watercolour blob lands in absolutely the wrong place, that there is... Now, to me, that, you see, that is drawing, because I think of painting as drawing in colour. And if there's anybody in this room who knows of a painting that isn't drawing, I will give them a Mars bar. Now, for instance, take someone like, for instance, you know, there's an idea that drawing applies to a certain kind of art. You know, I don't subscribe to that at all. For instance, Ellsworth Kelly. Ellsworth Kelly makes, you know, these beautiful, you know, you all know Ellsworth Kelly, shapes of colour. And he will sit in front of a picture for sometimes days. You know, and say he's got a white canvas and a blue shape with a curve over the top, and it's like a slice of cake, as it were. If that curve is wrong, or if it's too low or too high, he says he begins to feel ill. And so he moves the curve up a bit until he gets it right. Now, you know, we're talking about a journey without maps here. You know, he's not designing a building that's either going to fall down or stay up. But for him, that building is falling down.
No, I can understand that, because it's a response to what he's seeing, so it has to be right as far as he sees it. And I think you would be the same, and I would be the same, in that it's irritating when your hand doesn't actually put the line where you want it to be, and you either have to accept it or you start again, I suppose.
I think you start again.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's what keeps you going. Is because that. Yeah. I do. I just think that yes. I mean, it may sound confusing, this, because the idea that drawing can be anything, and that each new person comes along and draws in a different way, means that anything goes, and we all know that anything doesn't go. And sometimes you look at something and say, well, that person can't draw. And to me, the only way of explaining that is, it's a little bit like not getting a fresh lettuce in your salad. If the yes. salad is, if the lettuce is after its sell-by date and it's gone soggy.
You can see the mistakes, can't you? I mean, it's so obvious on the page.
It's what you're describing, Humphrey, when the drawing doesn't have the feeling, because it's something that you seem to suggest a little bit, that it comes from somewhere. Now, Elizabeth Kelly knew it didn't, that line wasn't quite right, and maybe that it's not that it's just been divorced from something which is the feeling. You know, when the mind takes over at a different level or it becomes more linear.
If it's part of the process...
She's right.
You are right, but it's part of the process. You're exploring where the line might go, and the first time you draw it might not be right, so you have to keep on until it is right.
Until the feeling...
Until you feel that it's right.
I think the petals of the Sydney project are really... I mean, it's really beautiful. You've got the curve of that space, of that... I don't know if it does come up here, but you've got the sculptural form of that building so well. You can see that the line's gone over until the feeling is right, until it's got that beautifully sculpted sense that I think, you know, the drawings really convey what the building is about. They get the form just right. They balance that thing about proportion, about a sense of nature.
But I couldn't have done that project 5 or 10 years ago. It'll come up, but yeah. I was trying to do an inhabited sculpture, and I had something in my mind, and I had to work to try and get it to make it come out in the right way.
I think the office gave you a printout, didn't they? A computer-generated printout, and you took that home and had to get the pencil, the things to sort of work physically on it rather than the
line.
No,
to start with, it was... I worked on it over Christmas, and I didn't have anything. I was just working on the idea that how could one create this sort of sculpture, and it came from a design I'd done for a sculpture on the borders of England and Scotland. It was a Charles Jenks competition to mark this important division at Gretna. And I was working with Diana, my wife, on this, and my son Dominic, and we were working on the idea of three petals that twisted. And it just... came to me that you could actually make a building out of it if you filled in the spaces between the petals, and so that's where the idea came from. And it's a large building, you know, 275 metres high, but it comes from a sculpture.
But you didn't explore it. What I find beautiful about it is your ability to, through a drawing, articulate a sculptural form, where a lot of architects would move quite, have a sense of what that sculptural form would be and might try and create a model. You know, they might try and sculpt it. But you have a very sophisticated, or my reading of it, a very sophisticated ability to capture a sculptural form in a drawing and to discover or to uncover potentially a sculptural form through a drawing.
Well, it's nice of you to say. But we do... We go into, you know, we have a model shop,
yep.
And we work in 3D. We have five model makers, and they... But you have to explain what you want. You know, I mean, you can't just say, I want something.
Yep.
You have to... And the drawing is one of the ways of explaining what you want. And they're wonderful. And it's amazing how you can explore form quite quickly through drawing and model making together.
Yeah, it's showing. That sort of, it gets it out of here. I mean, one of the great things we all do is we have ideas in our mind, and they're so clear.
Yeah.
Concepts, precepts, whatever they are, you know, that you cannot imagine that everybody else isn't thinking on exactly the same lines. But sometimes you have to get it out, and, you know, to make your petals. Can I, just listening to this, your exhibition... The lovely exhibition is sort of like a game of two halves. And you've got, on the one hand, you've got these drawings where you're explaining what you're thinking, which is in the first room.
Yes.
Which you're getting it out. And this is what. And The second, which is response. To me, that is, you are responding, and that's what informs the line. Whereas in the second room, where you're drawing buildings in Lucca and Italy and England and what have you, you're drawing things of things, those seem to be research. Am I right? I'm sure they're pleasure as well, but they're...
Research and hobby. I mean, I'm at my weakest on... I can't justify the drawing what I see because I'm not an artist. But I draw them as I see them, as an architect. So, you know, they're a bit sort of basic in a way. But I've been doing it for a long time, and it's a pleasure, really. I mean, I try not to take photographs when I travel, and I try to draw rather than take photographs. And I get more pleasure from looking at a sketch than I do a photograph. But it's a lot of effort, you know. I mean, it is, as you know, I mean, you just stand and draw the Parthenon. You can immediately see where it's not quite right and all the rest of it, but you just have to keep doing it, I suppose.
Yeah. Windows are the killer when you're drawing a building or what have you.
I think it's probably easier for you than it is for me, because I would have to have the right number of windows in the building.
Well,
and you've got the right number. I'm not saying you haven't, but
yeah,
I'm just saying...
No, that's got the right number. Yeah. Now, I've just explained that there is a sort of a crossover. I am, number one, not an architect. Number two, I'm not interested in buildings in the way... Perhaps in quite the same way as you are. But I'm... Can we hold this for a moment?
The atmosphere of that building. I think we all know... We've all seen buildings like that.
Well, I tell you what, it's in a street with the most beautiful early Victorian houses. And what happened was a stick bomb arrived and blew out the thing. And so that was built round about the time when I was built. And it may not be the most beautiful building in London, but I understand it. I mean, I understand...
No, I can see that.
Can you? Yeah?
And I think you've captured it, absolutely.
But the reason I paint it at night is because actually I found it very beautiful. It's about three studios ago, and I was coming underneath a big block of flats, and I'd come up, and it was at night because I had to park, because I couldn't park near the studios, I had to park over here. Come up, and there was this thing, and I thought, God, that's really beautiful. Just my sort of Albers-ish sense of proportion and whatever. Everything was right. And, of course, it's the light. Come back in the morning, it's the ugliest building in the world. And, you know, it looks like you think, oh, God, that's stupid. And you come out the next evening. Anyway, 6 months later, I think, oh, it is beautiful. I've got to do something about it. So I do something. I do something about it. But what I'm interested in, the other thing about that building, is that it got planning permission.
Yes.
And then I think of the town planning office, and it's, you know, it's all during the week, and they say, can we do it now? Go away. And then it's Friday lunchtime, they all think, oh, I'd love to get, I can get down to Cornwall. Oh, go on, build it. Yeah, yeah. And off they go. And what have, and I, you know, and so there's something about, you know, I do look at buildings, and I wonder sometimes how they've arrived.
I totally understand that. But looking at the drawing, I can see why you're professor of perspective. Because you've got it right. It's actually quite difficult to get the perspective right on something...
I love listening to this stuff.
...floating form that's going away from you. And probably an architect might have drawn it more like an elevation, because you wouldn't have to worry about it, but you've tackled it straight on in perspective, and you got it right.
Yes, thank you.
No, but it's very interesting, and I think
there's no guns.
More than that, you've captured the atmosphere of it without any lines, actually, just some paint.
Well, I'm not going to protest. I'm going to just lie here and lie back and think of England. But actually, there are quite a lot of lines around thing. Everything has a line around it, from a princess to a puddle.
Okay,
Chris. But
you haven't expressed the lines then. I think it's great.
Thank you. And
I think it's the difference between an artist tackling a building and an architect tackling it. It's very different.
I had one question, which I think probably for both of you, that came up here, and it's something that you're alluding to. And it strikes me, Chris, that you seem to draw in three ways. There's the sense of observation, and then there's drawing from your imagination when a building is formulating in your head, and then also that of perhaps memory, because I know sometimes you go to a site and then you sometimes will draw it after. And I wonder what the relationship is between those three things, how they feed one another. And you've got the same question.
Well, the time is the fourth thing, you know, because it depends where you are and how much time you've got and what you're trying to achieve. A lot of my sketches in the sketchbooks are done in the sort of time which I haven't allocated to anything else. So, you know, I particularly quite enjoy working on airplanes because I'm on airplanes a lot. And I found that I can draw and paint, actually, on an airplane. And it's a terrific way, you know, because going to Australia is sort of 23 hours on the plane. You can't sleep for 23 hours. And to find something that's enjoyable, other than watching movies and drinking, it's very useful to be able to draw. And, you know, people don't mind somehow.
So this sense of, you know, this room here has a lot of, the second room has a lot of works where you're observing architecture. How does that feed your imagination and then your memory and imagination and come back into your work, which I think is something you were talking about?
That would be very difficult to say, but architects, it's a collaborative process, so, you know, one isn't just working on one's own. You're working with quite a big team and you have to discuss everything you do. I mean, you don't have to, but we do. We work together. So when you say, I saw this amazing building in Rome which had this particular material or this proportion, and if you have it in your sketchbook, you can explain what you were thinking about, then people can... That gives you the basis of a discussion, a design discussion. And this works a lot. I mean, I've been, I think, in three design discussions today in the office in different projects. And, you know, it's a part of sort of getting together and working on things, but explaining what you're thinking and they say what they're thinking. And, you know, it's part of the creative process.
Humphrey, I've got the same question for you in some ways. That sense of observation, memory, imagination. They're not as separate. In Chris's work, we see it much more in terms of, say, the observation drawings of Luca. They're observation, but they're bringing in... They're clearly observation, where it strikes me in some of your work there and how you described, say, the drawing the house, that is, you're observing, but you're also, there's imagination and memory all at once coming out. Is that right, rather than being separate?
I kind of don't know which comes first, really. I mean, you know, all that guff about the town planning and everything was something that I... was thinking about, or have thought about over years, as it were, of making paintings of buildings. And it kind of feeds the interest, and then I go back and I make another picture. I kind of notice. One of the first buildings I painted was of a, a block of flats that's on built on the site of Honor Oak Station behind our house, old Honor Oak Station, that used to carry Pizarro. It was the next station down from Lordship Lane Station, which is the painting of which is in the courtauld by Pizarro, not me. That is, it's a 50s building, and you can see what's happening in there. Some people have bought their properties, and they've put in different windows and what have you. And I had it reminded me, I had this fascinating conversation. Somebody who lived next to my sister, he was an architect. Well, he died only a few years ago, but he was in the late 80s. And he designed a building in Highgate, a house. Martin, oh God, I can't remember. This is awful. Anyway, I found his building in Pevsner. And so the next time I saw him, he used to have open garden. I said, Martin, must be very proud of it. How lovely to have a house in Pevsner, for Christ's sake. He said, oh, it's not my house anymore. You know, they've changed the curtains, they've moved the stick. And I suddenly thought, oh, God, you know, this is like somebody coming in and putting a figure into one of my landscapes or what have you. I mean, you know, you're prey to... I mean, I think that your buildings are probably... You've kind of dealt with that. You've slightly reinforced. I mean, they are a statement. But, in you know, domestic architecture is fantastically... vulnerable, and as I say, this, you know, that's one of the things that interests me, about buildings. The other thing is that you mentioned teamwork. You know, I've tried collaborations throughout my life, and in fact, I was warned off it about 15 years ago. I got a friend of mine wrote me an email and said it is time to cease your collaborations. When you show me your own stuff, you beam and smile. When you show me the work you're doing with other people, you become taciturn and dark. And I did realise at that point is that, you know, what I am here for is, you know, the Beach Boys song in my room, you know, you close the door, and I'm allowed to think weird thoughts, and there isn't, I don't have to tell anybody else, you know, or sort of justify them. I do quite a lot of justifying myself. You know, I'll get, you know, just because I feel ill or I get bored or what have you, or it doesn't work. And so there are things that don't. And I kind of would love a bit of help. You know, I'd love a manager to do that. But in the end, you know, I am forced in back upon myself. And sorry, I'm bringing it back to Chris. I do think that in a way, the difference, you know, of the two rooms of the drawings when you are not thinking about art and when you're making, you know, this thing that is like this, that is utterly Chris Wilkinson, that could not have been made by Palladio, although he might come along and say, I like it. They couldn't have done it in there. Is absolutely you, and that's where your drawing is. You know, it has that. It's potent. At immediacy, straight, you know, boom, lovely.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the Royal Academy, please visit www.royalacademy.org.uk.